The Hard Shoulder with Kieran Cuddihy.
With the MG Hybrid and Electric range.
On News Talk.
If you've got little ears in and around the radio, you might want to distract them for just a few minutes because we're going to talk about something quite serious and maybe slightly inappropriate for them, depending on their age. It's a suggestion from the UK, from policymakers there. They are considering introducing chemical castration for sex offenders as a means of reducing re-offending and also of dealing with prison overcrowding, they say. With me to discuss is Dr. Patrick Randall, who's a clinical and forensic psychologist and director of Forensic Psychological Services. Patrick, you're welcome to the show. Is chemical castration a viable evidence-based treatment?
No, it's not, Kieran. A couple of reasons for that. First of all, the drug basically suppresses libido and sex drive. And a significant portion of sex offenses are committed not because of an overactive sex drive, but rather because of issues of dominance, power, control, aggression, and also then sexual drive as well. But certainly not exclusively sexual drive. So you're not likely to be targeting the right treatment modality with that.
But if you were to target the libido, despite the fact that that's not the main driver of the offence, as a consequence, do you still reduce the possibility of the offence being committed?
For a very small minority of offenders, you might.
Okay.
There are also issues of human rights and things like that, like to impose a medication, particularly a medication like that, which has a very substantial side effect profile, given it's working with hormones, you know, that affect a number of different systems in the body. So you're doing a lot more harm than you are good, potentially, to the human body. And the difficulty being that you're just suppressing one small element of the issue.
I have to admit, when I heard this story, I mean, that the example that immediately jumps to my mind is someone like Alan Turing, who kind of very famously underwent a chemical castration. Was there a period of time where it was used more widely?
There was a period of time when it was trialed, and then it fell more and more into disuse because of its ineffectiveness. So it's not an effective child protection strategy at all. I mean, if it was effective, then you could at least balance it. You could say, well, this is doing more good than it is harm, in that it's preventing offences from taking place. But it doesn't. And I suppose that's the bottom line. It's a red herring issue. It's something that's been trialed before in numerous locations across the globe, and it has been found to be ineffective. So it's not good in terms of child protection at all.
Yeah, one suspects that what's at play here is the reality that no politician ever lost votes by suggesting that they should take a hard line on sex offenders.
No, indeed, I guess, and in some ways it could be vote gathering, but certainly it's not an effective child protection strategy, and we need effective child protection strategies. That's really important.
So when you talk about the impact the treatments have on the body, the side effects, how profound are they? What can they be?
Well, the drug's been found, because you're dealing with the endocrine system and specifically the male hormonal system, you're dealing with all of the side effects attached to that. And the endocrine system works in harmony with other systems. So you're getting, you know, there've been increases of people with embolisms, with pulmonary embolisms as a result of this drug. There've been, you know, developmental issues. There've been the growth of breasts in males. So it has significant potential harm.
Let's set aside the what I suspect is the vote gathering reality of this, and let's assume for a moment somebody is genuinely trying to think of a way of offering a treatment to sex offenders that reduces the possibility of reoffence and does make children safer ultimately. What does the science tell us on that front today?
The science on that front tells us that one of the best treatment modalities to use is a thing called the Good Lives Model. And basically it's based on the premise that most people do not set out when they are growing up to be adolescents, growing through their childhood, they don't set out to be sexual offenders. And if you had to suggest to them that they were going to be a sexual offender, they would be utterly shocked and dismayed by that. So sexual offenses occur because people look to meet their needs for intimacy, for socialization, and that with children rather than with adults. So it's a maladaptive focus. It's a maladaptive behavior of a normal human need, the normal need for affiliation, normal human need for intimacy, including sexual intimacy. And due to absence of appropriate partners or due to psychological deficits in the part of the offender, in other words, they can't get a partner and they can't get their needs met through the normal, usual channels. Therefore, they develop this maladaptive need and they abuse children.
How do you best remedy that maladaptive need?
Maladaptive need is best remedied through a specialist group treatment program, which endures normally, takes place normally between 2 to 3 years long. And it takes that length of time to work through the necessary psychological changes for somebody to be able to reach out and meet their needs appropriately. Because if they don't have the social skills, we need to help them develop those social skills.
And to what degree are those types of interventions available in Irish prisons, for example?
In Irish prisons, they are available. They have sexual offender treatment programs in Arbour Hill and I think in the Midlands prison currently. And then after the prison program, there is the Safer Lives program. There's one done by One in Four as well, and there's one done by ourselves at Forensic Psychological Services.
The maladaptive need, as you describe it, is it often coupled with or to what degree is there an ignorance of the wrong that they have done? To what degree, let's flip it the other way to maybe make more sense to people listening. How often is it that somebody on foot of a conviction knows that they've got and recognises they've got this so-called maladaptive need? It's not what they might call it, but they realise, I've got something kind of misfiring within me and I need to address it.
No, look, I suppose to be dead straight with you, Kieran, most people know that it's wrong. Most people know that harm is caused by this. There are very, very few people in the world that would deny that they've caused their victims harm. I think another factor that we haven't actually looked at in this conversation is that I think by far the majority of people presenting for treatment these days are internet offenders and haven't directly offended against children. And there's a different dynamic at play there.
And is the evidence, Patrick, that without intervention, that those internet offenders will graduate to a physical offence?
Some will and some won't. It's not a foregone conclusion that they will. Some people, they don't have the social skills or the opportunity to seduce a child. And also a significant proportion of them wouldn't want to. And they would say, well, no, this is something that is on the internet. It's something that happens in fantasy, not in reality. But they forget that there are actual children being abused in those depictions.
And their rationalization is that this is a way of them kind of channeling that, I'm going to use the phrase again, the maladaptive need, or kind of channeling their urge, and they convince themselves that it's a harmless way of doing it.
Yes, that's right. Absolutely.
And are there ways you can, or are there jurisdictions in which there are examples of ways you can and have reach out to those people? You know, how would we describe them? The pre-offence paedophile.
Yes. Yes, exactly. There's been a program. There's a program in Germany that has been trialed, I believe, with significant success, where they use a prevention program where they have on actually national media, on television and in print media, they have adverts saying, you know, if you're thinking inappropriately about a child, here's a helpline you can contact, and treatment will be available. Similarly, in the UK, there's a program called Stop It Now, which is looking to intervene in advance of any offences being made. And that's very similar to the program in Germany. The program in Germany, however, is much more widely advertised.
All right. Listen, Patrick, fascinating stuff, and thanks a million for speaking to us.
You're most welcome, Kieran.
Yeah, Dr. Patrick Randall is a clinical and forensic psychologist and director of Forensic Psychological Services.
The Hard Shoulder with Kieran Cuddihy.
With the MG Hybrid and Electric range.
Weekdays from 4 on News Talk.